The apocryphal scriptures indicate that Terah, the father of Abram, fearing that Abram might be destroyed by Nimrod, the then ruler, having some evidence that that might happen, sent Abram away to be raised by Noah and Shem, who were still alive. This would explain why God found faith in Abraham, and Abraham would return to be disappointed at his own father's idol worship. Now, I see some people are nutty enough to keep calling. Just hang it up and put it right back. Well, that thing's buzzing, just hang it up and put it back. I'm talking now. I announced that I'd be talking when the first song finished. There's nobody going to answer your calls. And make sure they don't answer it over in the other studio. My turn. I wish God would lift the burden from me of having to teach the whole world manners. But until He does, I'm going to keep doing it. Thank God. Few there be that enter in thereat. The reason I'm not like other television evangelists, I don't try to convert anybody. I see so few in this world that I would want to see again in heaven. I don't try to convert anybody. Ain't that awful? Sure it is. It's awful. So many miserable fools in this world. I don't suffer fools. God has to save you. But you don't have to be saved to have manners. You've got to have some good sense. But if you want to wear your finger out the rest of the night, go ahead and be an asshole. And when Abraham came to that one particular phone, put it down on the floor. I don't even want to see the damn light. Cover it up with a hat or something. There's a hat. Come get it, Joe. There's a whole bunch of hats. Cover it up. Save a book. Is almost as good as a good golf shot. Now, when Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek, he was paying tithe to the one who had taught him. Because Melchizedek is none other than Shem. Herodotus talks of the pyramid. He tells what he had heard from Manetho, the Egyptian priest, who tells of strangers, shepherds, who had come into Egypt, taken control of it, and then left, and that was at the time of the building of the pyramid, in their records, to build Jerusalem. Other ancient records have Ham, after the curse, becoming the founder of Egypt, his descriptive subsequent name, which characterized what he did, which was the driver back of the waters by the building of dikes, became the name of Egypt itself. As so often the founder of a place, his name becomes the name of the place in those ancient records. And Shem came into Egypt in his conflict with Ham, conquered Ham, and returned to build Jerusalem. You will also find in Scripture that Joshua never recorded any Philistines to be driven out of Canaan. You encounter the Philistines later. Yet there are Philistines in the time of Abraham, but not the same. Descendants of Joktan. These earlier Philistines are those of whom Abimelech is a member, who was a contemporary of Shem, also of the same Semitic line. Now, the fact that Sunday school doesn't teach much about true history doesn't change the fact that the records are there to be found. And the pyramid is not of Egypt or by Egypt any more than the Greek culture is of Greece or by Greece. As the research of Professor Cyrus Gordon has taught, but rather someone outside of Egypt came, picked the place, and built this marvelous structure, the seventh wonder of the world. Now, we were on some of its scientific qualities. Since tradition would have us believe that we sort of advanced from the Stone Age and have improved as the years have gone on with a kind of social evolution to match natural evolution, as two colon here now, Brad. We're trying to figure out how these ignorant Stone Age people could have built this great pyramid. And I read a little more tonight from Great Pyramid Proof of God. While the Great Pyramid has been in the limelight of the centuries ever since its completion, nothing very startling was said about it until John Taylor of London, England, in 1859, declared in a small volume which he published on the pyramid that he found in its shape and measures, quote, an intellectuality and numerical knowledge of grand cosmical phenomena of earth and heavens, which neither Egypt nor any of the nations of antiquity possessed or could even understand. Now, of course, we don't have any trouble at all. We Christians who believe the Bible, we don't have any trouble at all. Believe in God told Moses how to build the tabernacle and said, see to it you build it exactly. Exactly in every detail. According to the dimensions that I gave you on the mount. Don't most evangelical Christians believe that? We don't have any trouble at all believing. Too cold still. Knock it off for a while and I'll tell you when to turn it on. We don't have any trouble believing that God told Noah how to build the ark, considering the fact it never rained. And there's no evidence that boating was a great and profound sport. I mean, if I'd been one of those animals, I wouldn't want to get into it. Unless there was somebody giving directions to Noah that knew what he was doing. But we believe God gave Noah the dimensions. We have any trouble believing that God gave Ezekiel instructions for the reconstituted temple to be built in the millennium. If the pyramid is God's monument in stone, which immediately raises eyebrows, brings sort of half smiles on the face. Did God exhaust his builder's knowledge with the ark and the tabernacle? Why is it so hard for Christians to think he might have had another one that he wanted built exactly according to his specs? Taylor said the pyramid in its shapes and measures is an intellectuality and numerical knowledge, or reveals that, of grand cosmical phenomena of the earth and heavens, which neither Egypt nor any of the nations of antiquity possessed or could even understand. I want to tell you something else. When you come to the map room of the pyramid and the interior chambers, which is the so-called antechamber, you find there a measuring translation device built into that antechamber that enabled ordinary workers in Egypt who did not use nor could not comprehend the sacred cubit to work with their royal cubit and still make it come out according to the dimensions of the sacred cubit. There was a measuring translator built into it, which is to say, if human hands participate in the building of it, which we have to assume, they didn't necessarily have to understand what it was they were putting down. Only the architect and the master builder had to understand. This bold statement interested Sir John Herschel and Professor Piazzi Smith, Astronomer Royal of Scotland. Hey, these are not lectures at Lynchburg Bible College or Liberty Bible College. Not even Fuller Theological Seminary, which I respect. This is the Astronomer Royal of Scotland, a position earned by his contributions to the science. Earned respect from fellow scholars. Both distinguished men of science, the findings of the latter, Professor Piazzi Smith, the Astronomer Royal of Scotland, who in 1865 spent 6 months surveying the Great Pyramid, were afterward published in 3 brilliant volumes. I have one of them down here I may read from tonight. The labors of these able men were subsequently extended by the excellent work of the eminent Sir Flinders Petrie. Since their day, practically all the great nations have had representative men of science investigate this wonderful monument. It remained, however, for Davidson and Aldersmith, especially the former, to prepare an exhaustive scientific demonstration of the truth and meaning of the pyramid. The profound results of almost a score of years of intense study are preserved today in their most valuable book entitled The Great Pyramid, Its Divine Message. Now I'm going to need you, Mick, over by that pyramid map, seeing if you can focus in on it without the light. If you need the light, you'll have to tell them to turn the light on. And you start out with the whole map. You'll have to sort of follow me along when I get ready to call on it. Now let's look at it. Yeah, we can see it. The profound results of almost a score years of intense study are preserved today in their most valuable book entitled The Great Pyramid's Divine Message. Now let's look at some of its qualities. And as I told you the other night, I'm reading from several introductions, and this is merely the packaging of the pyramid. The inside message, the gift package for the pyramid, is more important than the packaging. According to the International Spheroid of Reference adopted in 1924, the polar diameter of the Earth is 7,900 miles. This is the finding of modern science and represents an achievement not possible until recent years, refined considerably since this book was written. The pyramid inch, measuring just 0.0011 more than the English inch, 10,011 equaling 10,000 pyramid inches, which means 11 ten-thousandths of an inch is the difference. So break an inch into 10,000 parts, and 11 of those 10,000 parts is the difference between the British inch and the pyramid inch. And indicated by the boss on the granite leaf in the antechamber, you have to go in close on that antechamber, which is up in the left upper corner. You can see it better up there, Mick. You see a low passage as you walk through, then a higher passage, then another low passage, and you'll notice it looks like a little slab extending out just as you go into the antechamber. That's the boss, as it is called, so-called. Very important to certain measuring units within the pyramid. Indicated with the boss on the granite, and we've not spent as much time in that antechamber. We always seem to get bogged down in a marathon or something about the time we get to the big step, when we've done this in the past. Indicated by the boss on the granite leaf in the antechamber is very definitely stated in the Book of the Dead, which is the book that used to be buried with the dead in ancient Egypt, to be exactly 1/500,000,000th of this diameter. A simple calculation will show that 500 million such inches represent within 100 feet the accepted diameter of 7,900 miles. And all of that, very complicatedly said by this person, is simply saying that if you take the axis of the Earth from North Pole to South Pole, divided into 500 million units, you have the unit of measure, the so-called pyramid inch, sometimes called the sacred inch, 11 ten-thousandths of an inch, deviated from the British inch, though the deviation has been the other way around as it traveled west. And that 1/500,000,000th of the distance from the north to the south pole along the axis through the center of the earth is the measuring unit of the pyramid, permanently inscribed therein as its measuring unit. In this connection, it will be of interest to examine the metric inch, this unit of measure of atheistic and rebellious origin, having been introduced by the French skeptics during the Reign of Terror in 1790, and rejecting everything which savored of the divine. They estimated the length of a quadrant of the Earth's circumference along the meridian passing through Paris, taking the North Pole going on the surface of the Earth to the equator on the meridian that passes through Paris. They then divided this by 10 million and so obtained the unit of measure known as the meter, which is 39.371 English inches. Concerning this product of the atheistic scientists that were going to remove anything divine, we need not be surprised to learn that it harmonizes quite well with their frightful and tragic administration of French affairs that's kept French weak ever since, with all of its divisions. As a unit of measure, it represents an error of 100,000 inches in its estimate of the polar diameter. Because, and come back to me, the surface of the Earth is not even. And you're trying to come up with a measuring unit based upon the curvature of the Earth's surface. It really has no scientific value whatsoever. Sir John Herschel pronounced it the newest and worst measure in the world. While another man of science, regarded it as inconvenient, inaccurate, and unstridable. Now let's look at the pyramid with its accurate measuring unit. I have said this briefly, but this book goes into a little more detail. With most folks, 1 year at a time is about all they care to handle. That's the truth. Modern astronomers recognize three and know the exact length of each. These same years designated solar, sidereal, and anomalistic are specifically delineated in the measurements of the pyramid. Now, we have the Earth going around and around on its axis at a tilt which wobbles, extending north out through the polar axes of the Earth. It draws a little circle like a compass on the vault of the heavens so that the North Star changes every 2,000 years through a 25,000-year-plus cycle called the precession of the equinoxes. And this Earth wobbling on its axes on an elliptical orbit is going around the sun, the orbit itself moving, and the sun itself moving around some center somewhere. And in these precise movements of the heavens, there are three different years that can be calendarized. Most modern people don't even know about it. Yet it's permanently inscribed in the pyramid. I'm going to show you as we go into the second half hour now. I'm reading from Great Pyramid, Proof of God. To align a building to true north is a monumental modern accomplishment. There are some important attempts in relatively recent history that haven't succeeded and are off true north a degree or two. Yet the pyramid perfectly aligned to true north. Not compass north, true north. Its four sides thus perfectly aligned to all the cardinal points. The angle of incline of this four-sided pyramid is such that the relationship of height to its perimeter is exactly that of radius to the circumference of a circle. And thousands of years before pi was discovered, in many places within the pyramid, it encompassed in structural form the concept of pi. It is a duplication in pyramid form. It's like the squaring of a circle. If you take the pyramid and draw a circle around its points as though the base of the pyramid to the peak of the pyramid is the base of the pyramid being the center of the circle and the height of the pyramid, the radius, and draw a circle, the base of the pyramid embraces the exact same space. It's the circle squared. Too hot now, Brad. And thus the pyramid sits in a structural form to typify mathematically the top half of the earth as though it were sliced in half along the equator. In its measurements, it encompasses, as already said, the building block of the universe mathematically, 1/500 millionth of the distance from the North Pole to the South Pole, sliced into 500 million parts, you have the so-called pyramid or sacred inch. It embraces in its mathematical reproductions in structural form the distance from the Earth to the Sun. It sits on the meridian and it sits on the horizontal line, if drawn, that marks as an X the spot on the earth that represents the true center of the landmass of the earth, what ought to be zero rather than Greenwich, England. I could go on, as I will in these various introductions, with amazing statistic representing a fact of this universe, one after another, that shows a mathematical and astronomical knowledge not possible to primitive man as tradition has outlined his development. And in its base measurements, 3 separate calendar years showing a sophisticated knowledge of the movement of the earth around the sun, not possible, as just said, for these, quote, primitive men. The solar year is the one we live by. 365.24 days is the time interval between 2 successive autumn equinoxes in the earth's journey around the sun. This year symbolizing the pyramid with the length of each true base side given in sacred Hebrew cubits, which is 25 of the pyramid inches, and also with the circuit of the base given in pyramid inches. Over here, Mick. I need you to look at a little diagram. These various measurements are diagrammed. I'll pick just the simplest one and then save us time by telling us only one. Just stay there, Mick. From A to D on this chart represents 365.24 cubits, a cubit being 25 pyramid inches, or 9,131 pyramid inches from A to D, which, based on the sockets, is the original designer's plan of the base of the pyramid. As those of you that listen to me teach know, the designer's plan was altered, and the pyramid as built was a bit smaller, 286.1 pyramid inches to be exact, smaller. Now, if you go 4 times A to D, which is all the way around, you have 36,524.24 inches, or 100 times the solar year in days. Or if you measure just one side in cubits, you have the same figure again. So the solar year is encompassed in the basic plan. You can go back over there now. Nick, I won't take the time to go through the diagram because I don't want to bog us down in this introduction.
This is the end of side one. For more of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side two. Thank you.
So the solar year is encompassed in the basic plan. You can go back over there now. Nick, I won't take the time to go through the diagram because I don't want to bog us down in this introduction. The sidereal year, so you'll understand it, is a second astronomical year. And since sidereal means starry or astral, the length of the sidereal year is determined not by the relation of the autumn equinox to the sun, but rather to the stars. When the Earth in its revolvement returns to a certain position in the autumn equinox to the sun, you have the solar year counted out. So many days, so many nights. The sidereal year is based upon the relationship to the stars. As, for example, if an observation is taken exactly at midnight of the autumn equinox, September 22nd, on a certain fixed star, and then taken again at the moment of the next autumn equinox, a year later, the result will show the time interval of the sidereal year to be about 20 minutes more than the solar year. It will come out not to 365.24, it'll come out to 365.2564, because of the wobble and the movements of the heavens when the revolving around the sun returns to the same spot in relation to the sun. It takes 20 minutes longer to return to the same spot in relation to the same star that's out there in the heavens, because the stars are moving. The Earth is wobbling on its orbit. It may turn and get 365 days, but there's a little bit of wobble involved that makes the return in relationship to the same star out there, another sun, so to speak, 20 minutes later than achieving the same position to our closer sun. This difference is due, his explanation is probably better than mine, to the wobbling of the Earth and perhaps also to a slight disharmony in the movement of the star sphere. To ascertain the difference in time between these 2 years, the solar, which we all live by, and the sidereal, was quite an achievement for modern astronomy. It was rather an astounding surprise for scientists to learn that this whole matter was already symbolized in the base design of the Great Pyramid, because how it was built was different than the way it was designed, and then there's a third element in the concavity of the side, so slight you don't see it when you look at it, but when the casing stones were in place, it would be more apparent, and those are easily ascertained in the projection of the measurement from the base casing stones as they've been dug down and uncovered. A third year is the so-called anomalistic year. The zero point in the Earth's annual journey around the Earth is perihelion, because at that point in an elliptical orbit, the Earth is closest to the sun. At some points, it's further away from the sun than at other times in its elliptical orbit. So now the solar year has to do with the revolving Earth going around 365.24 and returning to the same spot in relationship to the sun in the autumn equinox. The sidereal year, same autumn equinox in relationship to a fixed star where the measurement was taken, comes 20 minutes later. Perihelion spots the place in the orbit where the Earth is closest to the sun. Some people hearing this for the first time, not having any background in astronomy at all, may have difficulty just grasping this quickly. Imagine the Stone Age man in a fit of anger hitting a rock with his axe and a speck flying off and saying, "Huh, three specks flew off and they each flew three different ways. Let's permanize it in the pyramid." What tradition would have us believe is harder to believe than the truth. Since we are in the northern latitudes, we're in this position closest to the sun in the dead of winter, or about January 1st, which makes it fortunate and providential for us that we're the closest to the sun at that particular time. Modern astronomers have discovered that because of a wobbling Earth, the autumn equinox occurs 25 minutes before perihelion, thereby making the anomalistic year that much longer than the solar year and about 5 minutes more than the sidereal year. Because of the wobble, this anomalistic year that has to do with when we return to perihelion is about 25 minutes longer, 5 minutes more than the sidereal, giving a separate figure, 365.24 for the solar year, 365.2564 for the sidereal year, 365.2599 days for the anomalistic year. Now, I'm sure that we can live and die, produce babies, go to college, get a degree, and make a living, and probably go to heaven, and not have to know any of this. And if in a modern world, where we got astronauts flying around and sending picture-taking probes to Venus, and satellites that people line up and shoot me out there 23,000 miles and back in 1 second before you hear me, if this is of such little import to us, what in the hell is a Stone Age guy concerned with it for, particularly to try to inscribe it in the base of a 13.5-acre building? That's the point. I don't care if you remember these figures or not. I mean, have people spend their whole life on these measurements. But the facts are that you got to know the orbit of the Earth and the movement of the heavens, and have graduated from the Flat Earth Society, worrying about sailing off the edge of the Earth, to have this kind of knowledge. And built in the base structure of the pyramid are exactly, we're talking to 100 decimal points, exactly these three measurements around the base of the pyramid, symbolizing that which has to do with the revolving of the Earth in its orbit. Too cold now, Brad, wherever Brad is. Find somewhere in between those 2 points. I'm already boring you. I'm not going to read you the same details about the distance from the Earth to the sun, except to say the figure in the pyramid is 92,996,085 miles. And the debate tends to swing around between 91 million and 92 million miles. Let's start over again. 92,996,085 miles. Pyramid inscribed it over 4,000 years ago. Knowing the density of the Earth, physicists can readily ascertain its weight. Again, we find ourselves confronted in the pyramid with a surprising fact. The weight of this tremendous structure is approximately 5,300,000 tons, which is 1,000 trillionth the weight of the Earth. It also calculates the density of the Earth in its figures. It's at the center of the land area. It's on the mean ocean and land levels of the Earth. It sits at the edge and the center of Egypt. How could a caveman figure all this out? Did it happen by accident? Back to Peter Le Mesurier, the Great Pyramid Decoded. Now, the only gestalt I want to land on you is that depending upon the capacity of your gray matter to not explode with resentment, the golden mean, pi, all of these calculations of density, landmass, size, shape, orbits, it's all built into the mathematics in structural form of the pyramid. Some genius. And that doesn't even take into account the fact what we were talking about earlier, that Bechtel couldn't build it. How do you move 20 to 70 ton marble blocks, cut them an average mean of 1/100th of an inch, 5 by 7 feet, 35 square feet vertical, where the distance between the two joints has a maximum of 1/50th of an inch, and then pour 35 square feet of cement in that narrow joint and have it have equal consistency to join them together while you're working with 20 to 70 ton blocks. Talking about laser technology. As a tomb? No wonder when it was finished, the king must have said, "Too good for me to be buried in. Find another hole to put me in." There was nobody buried in it. Then what in the world was it built for? And who built it? And what could have been the circumstances that spurred him on? Lemaitre says, as I go back to him now, "We cannot tell. Perhaps he foresaw the cataclysm that was to come to the earth. Or perhaps that cataclysm had already overwhelmed a stricken mankind. In which, am I boring you? In which case, we might see the pyramid's designers as one of a group of advanced emissaries from that former civilization. Colonizers or civilizers of the stamp of Osiris and Thoth. And men who Noah-like had succeeded in surviving the cataclysm by building mighty boats in which they eventually reached the land of Egypt. And if so, then the remains of the great wooden boat since discovered in the five boat pits sunk deep in the seashell-laden rock around the pyramid may have an unexpected significance." They may commemorate not so much the solar symbolism of the ancient Egyptian funeral rites as the primeval voyage of those ancient founding fathers, under whose lofty auspices the adjacent pyramid's enormous pile was eventually to be raised. And bear in mind, incidentally, that the great Thoth himself, under his Greek name Hermes, was credited specifically by the Egyptian priest historian Manetho with having produced 36,525 books of ancient wisdom, a figure identical to the number of primitive inches in the Great Pyramid's design perimeter. 524.24 exactly, not 525. Be that as it may, the question still remains, what serious purpose is a doomed civilization likely to have in trying to communicate with its successors? The most obvious aim would seem to be the transmission of some kind of warning or advice designed to help the later civilization avoid the pitfalls which trapped its predecessor, or perhaps even to steer it into a path consistent with man's true capabilities and destiny. The knowledge of this, we may perhaps infer, the earlier civilization had gained but had been unable or unwilling to fulfill and so wished to pass it on for the benefit of posterity. I told you I'm going to read a lot of introductions so you can get a lot of speculation. This is not a fundamentalist here. I'm not sure he believes in anything. He's kind of one of those religion of all religions type guys. The idea seems fanciful, perhaps, yet such a function would appear to be consistent with the salvationist function apparently assigned to the pyramid indicated in the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And there are strange echoes of the same idea in the ancient Judeo-Christian scriptures. That gives you an idea where he's coming from. He puts them all on the same boat. In fact, if the designer believed in some form of resurrection, as is perhaps not unlikely, we may even see in the pyramid's construction a degree of self-interest. See, he's not willing to go all the way and say what Josephus said, descendants of Seth, knowing a cataclysm was coming, preserve certain knowledge to go past the cataclysm, in a monument made of brick in Mesopotamia and one of stone made in Egypt, which Josephus says still stands in his day, the first century. God preserved a family. Is there any reason to believe he wouldn't preserve a message that anticipated these last days? The book of Isaiah says it clearly. Then there are six of them. Six descriptions of last day events that have not yet been fulfilled. And one of them is a monument or altar as a witness to God will stand at the edge and at the center of Egypt in that last day, testifying as a witness to God. God anticipated the atheistic, naturalistic, scientific age. And he kept a message enshrined in stone for that age to uncover it sooner than the 1800s, though it had been there for centuries, until Taylor's bomb was dropped. It was just assumed to be a funeral pyre or a granary. Some even postulated it was a granary during the famine in Egypt. But in the 19th century, it became the answer to a scientific mind that wants a message from God. As the book of God speaks of God, and as the stars of the heavens declare God, this certainly could be a message that God intended. The external features and dimensions of the pyramid, then, seen in this light, would have the function of validating the designer's main message. The scientific knowledge incontrovertibly contained in its dimensions, the mystery of its building that goes beyond even this century's ability to duplicate, to those who look, gets attention. And the genius and the knowledge more than 4,000 years ago, so contradicting the traditional viewpoint of man's state at that time, gives a validation to the message contained therein, as the resurrection of Christ gives a validation, so stated Paul on Mars Hill, to ordain the message of God's Word incarnate in human flesh. These external features and scientific qualities can be interpreted as the credentials, the evidence that the pyramid knows or contains a message from one who knows what he's talking about. You want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
The next book I'm going to read from is one on which I own the copyright, so I don't have to tell you who or what. Mine. Say what I want to about it. I own the copyright on it. First time I stared at the rugged interior of the Great Pyramid of Giza, the largest of man's accomplishments in stone, I was filled with awe at the enormity of the monument. Now, I told you I'm going to read the introduction to several books as we set the stage. Well, the central teaching on the pyramid is, what is the message contained therein? Every great truth that God wants man to hear, you can be sure that the prince of the power of the air, the one we wrestle against, not flesh and blood, is going to camp out on that territory to throw his smoke screen and confuse. Look at the way the church world has been turned off on astronomy. And who led the way in the stupid flat earth viewpoints in the Middle Ages if it wasn't the church? closing the minds of people. And astrology, that has totally turned the church world off on astronomy. And I'm not that sure that the church should be that totally turned off on the basic truths that are at the root of astrology. How do you know what kind of effect on your cell structure is made by certain alignments in the heavens? I don't like to see the mind closed on anything. I don't think God's scared of truth. But it is certainly true, and Paul was speaking in the past tense when he said God's message is written in the heavens. From the virgin to the lion, God wrote his message in the heavens. The man who knew better began to worship the creature instead of the creator. And God's message in the stars has been there long before the record was written through his oracle people. The written word of God. And you can be sure that because of the importance in God's plan of this monument and testimony that God placed at the border and at the center of Egypt, you can be sure that Satan will camp out there too. And there have been just as many nuts in pyramidology as any other area. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. The first time I stared at the rugged exterior of the Great Pyramid of Giza, Jesus, as some used to call it, the largest of man's accomplishments in stone, I was filled with awe at the enormity of the monument. At the same time, I was appalled at its condition and the state of the immediate environment. The Great Pyramid had been stripped of its original beauty and perfection. Now it was littered, vandalized, trampled, and urinated upon through the ages of ignorance and apathy. I had come to Egypt to explore and perhaps even worship in this ancient structure. My controversial theory and unorthodox thinking about the Great Pyramid would one day be a book. Was I about to encounter facts that would force a reconsideration? The visit to Giza convinced me beyond a doubt that our standard textbooks and the accepted legends of the Great Pyramid are all erroneous. Which is why I tell you no one book will do it for you. You better stay tuned. And I can't resist, again, making the rather humorous observation that when I taught on the pyramid a few years ago, after I was into it a while, they were teaching on the pyramid everywhere. People were advertising in the paper, meetings at hotels where they teach on the pyramid. People were taking tours and spending long side trips at the pyramid in Egypt. Remember that? I mean, the pyramid teaching was everywhere for a while. Then I quit. And pretty soon you don't hear anybody else doing anything with it. I left them right where I left you. They didn't know where to go. Now you watch them pick it up again. And as I said the other night, I might just be cantankerous enough to take us back up to the great step and stop again. However, even as the academicians are wrong in saying this magnificent monument was built as a tomb for a pharaoh, so too are the mystics and occultists wrong in many of their notions. The purpose of the Great Pyramid is very clear to me, and it's amazingly profound. As I clambered over the huge stone blocks ascending the pyramid, I shouted with joy to the amazement of my Arab guide. Despite the vandalism and the centuries of erosion, the evidence of Masonic perfection was obvious. The tremendous differences between the Great Pyramid and its neighbors on the plateau were also obvious. Standing near the original entrance and studying the ancient stonework, I recalled a story I'd heard. A modern contractor boasted of how modern methods and equipment could make the building of the Great Pyramid child's play. I wondered how a builder could possibly be accurate enough in his assessment of modern workmen and machines, and how they'd go about placing the more than 2.3 million blocks of stone atop one another. In my mind's eye, I tried to visualize an army of hard hats working with cranes and forklifts and trucks, perhaps even a railroad spur, giant helicopters even. I visualized the signal whistle and the pay line, the engineers and the union bosses. No way. We don't have a construction firm today that could handle the job. Hell, we have trouble enough building a section of highway without numerous change orders, material delays, and reevaluation of cost estimates, not to mention union restrictions. I felt the limestone blocks and foolishly tried to count them. I stood at the base of each corner and noted that as much as 30 feet of masonry had been peeled off the original corners. It was easy to see why any theory based upon the exterior measurements was controversial. It would require geometry to develop any accuracy. Mathematical extensions from the accurate base, where the original marble limestone had been uncovered with recent archaeological digs. I then climbed to the top. That's against the rules, but a small bribe to an Arab guide and a start in the quiet early morning hours got around the problem. From the top, the view is gorgeous, spectacular. Later, while exploring inside, I rushed to the huge blocks of granite that block the first ascending passage. The entry is forced around these blocks. One of the keys in the expert's argument is whether these 3 or 4 ton granite blocks could have been skidded down the 130 feet of narrow passage. Orthodox Egyptologists say that's what happened. Engineers, architects, and I contend it's not possible. I noted that less than a 1/16 of an inch of clearance existed all the way around the block. Not enough clearance to slide the blocks into the place from above. We're taught many things in school. Why should we doubt what we're taught by our own institutions? I recall that my high school history instructor impressed me tremendously, and I wanted to be a history major in college. The dogmatic overview of history I received in high school was so much a part of my thinking.